BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
This is a download of Farming Today from the BBC. The presenter today, Kaz Graham.
Good morning. Today, first the agriculture bill, now the trade bill. What might voting down amendments on UK food standards mean?
If they're undercut, then a lot of farmers may find that they really, really struggle to survive the level of competition they might well then face.
More on that later. First, though, bees, butterflies and moths help to pollinate agricultural crops. One of the reasons we're discussing pollinators on the programme all this week. Pollinator populations have been in decline since the 1950s, largely due to the loss of their natural habitats. Field margins around the edge of arable land are important breeding grounds for butterflies, as are fields that are set aside out of production. And farmers have been able to apply for Agri-Environment Scheme funding to help pay for providing this pollinator-friendly habitat. Butterfly expert and writer Matthew Oates took a stroll near his home in Wiltshire to see how pollinators are taking advantage of the field margins on one such farm.
Wandering a footpath on the Gloucestershire-Wiltshire borderlands that runs through a piece of old, neglected broadleaf woodland out into a vast field of golden barley. It looks pretty good to me. But the headlands, the lower grade agricultural land headlands, have been in agri-environment funding for a few years now and are absolutely purple with common knapweed mingled with the soft yellow of lady's bed straw, which is having a good year. There are 9 species of grass feeding butterfly. There's a lot of ringlets, dark sooty ringlets, a number of meadow browns, some golden large skippers flashing past, and just to add an element of total chaos to this beauty and glory and wonder, the small and Essex skipper occurring together. The only way you can tell the difference between those two really is by looking at the undersides of the antennae, if they allow you to do so. And of course at night it would be different, it would be alive with moths as well. And it's not just the butterflies and other pollinators here, a lot of bumblebees, one or two mining bees as well. And if I wander along to the field margin, it's full of two types of cranesbill plants, and there's a colony of the brown Argus butterfly here, which is quite a local species. I just walked through a cloud of meadow browns, and I think this is instant nature, this is instant wildlife. It's cheap, it's affordable, it's very good use of the lower grade agricultural land margins. And I think the main joy, the main benefit of these strips is that they enable insects to disperse, to move around the countryside, finding new places to colonise, to move on, in other words. And that's incredibly important for insects, which are forever on the move and need to wander around the countryside. And we need to be able to help that movement, facilitate their dispersal. I'm someone who wants to see more marginal land used like this, and I want to buy food produced from farming systems such as this.
Matthew Oates, surrounded by pollinators in Wiltshire. Last week on Farming Today, we ran a series of exclusive reports in which British agricultural workers, new to the job of picking fruit and veg, talked about poor working conditions, treatment of workers, a lack of social distancing, a lack of masks, and also a lack of hand sanitizer on farms and in packhouses. They also raised concerns that migrant labourers, who make up the bulk of the harvesting workforce on some farms, may not raise these issues because they either don't know their rights or were afraid to do so. Well, we had a lot of response to these reports. Sasha Workman on Twitter said, "It sounds like British workers in picking and packing are throwing a much-needed light on the UK industry and the exploitation of our continental cousins. Perhaps better standards, conditions and policing of abuse will ensue, with the benefit that more UK people will want to work in this industry." Charlie Jahanshad told us that she spent 25 years doing picking work and offers a little bit of balance, saying, the problem is most people don't appreciate that it takes a lot of practice to build up speed and earn good money. And she also adds, perhaps controversially, young people now definitely aren't into physical work at all. I'm British, but I must say that in general, I find many British people lazy. And Mary Frost asks, why are there no reports of farms receiving inspections? Who would be responsible? Well, one of the people ultimately responsible is the Secretary of State for the Environment, George Eustace. Earlier this week, Anna Hill asked him for his reaction to our story.
Well, look, we've issued very clear guidance from Public Health England to all food business operators, including farms and pack houses, about how they should minimise the risk of the transmission of this virus while continuing to operate.
Are you checking up on them, though? Are they being checked on? Because these accounts were direct from people working there.
What I would say is, as long ago as March, right from the beginning of this, we had guidance from Public Health England around, for instance, shared transport for people going to work, particularly minibuses, which are used in some horticultural businesses. And we've had advice as well on production lines, both in factories or indeed on a packing line, for instance, for soft fruit, around how to minimise the risk by keeping staff at least 2 metres apart, or if that's not possible, arranging the line in a way so that they're facing away from one another. So we have given quite a lot of detailed guidance and advice in this area. If there's specific examples of people saying that that's not being observed, then obviously it is a matter either for the Health and Safety Executive or for the police to investigate.
And the concern, I think, from these UK workers was that they felt that the migrant workers really didn't either know their rights or felt very reluctant to bring them up. Can you do anything to help there?
Well, the responsibility for observing the guidelines and putting in place measures to keep staff safe very much rests with individual businesses. And of course, if individual staff have got concerns, then they should feel free and empowered to raise those with the business. But we very much hold businesses to account for making sure that they put in place measures to keep staff safe, to observe social distancing, to have hand sanitizers there when that's helpful and necessary to reduce the risk of infection. And it's the businesses that we need to hold to account for observing the social distancing guidelines we've got in place.
The Environment Secretary, George Eustace, talking to Anna Hill. He's also just announced what he describes as a significant milestone in the long-term strategy for eradicating bovine TB. It's a disease that leads to the slaughter of more than 40,000 cattle each year. But now, after 20 years of research into bovine TB vaccines and diagnostic tests, field trials of a vaccine for cattle have finally been given the green light. They'll be conducted over the next 4 years on behalf of DEFRA, the Welsh Government and the Scottish Government. And Mr. Eustace has his work cut out for him at the moment. DEFRA currently has not one but two bills, the Agriculture Bill and the Environment Bill, working their way through the parliamentary process. And the Trade Bill, which was in the House of Commons on Monday, has got a lot of farmers talking. As MPs wind down for the summer recess, I've been hearing from Mark Darcy, the BBC's parliamentary correspondent, and he began by telling me about the Agriculture Bill's progress through the House of Lords, where it's being scrutinised by committee.
It's kind of a preliminary shadow boxing phase when something's in committee in the Lords. They kind of bring in amendments and they talk about them, but they never actually vote on them. And what happens is that they hear what the answers are and they kind of refine the arguments and find out what the ministers think the bill means. And the minister perhaps goes away and makes slight change or offers slight changes for what's called report stage, which is going to come up in this particular bill in September. And that's when you actually get things pushed to a vote because you've kind of drawn the precise battle lines. The dirty little secret of Parliament is that actually the Lords is an awful lot better at looking in the fine detail of legislation. And that's where the devil for a lot of the things that farmers will be concerned about will lurk, in the very precise wording of particular clauses. So that's where the action will be.
So they're perhaps really good at pulling out things which will then be sent back to the Commons.
Yes, indeed. I mean, the agriculture bills already had quite a going over by the Lords in this discussion phase. Six whole days of detailed discussion. They'll pull stuff back, and if they change the bill, it will go back to the Commons, and MPs will have to decide whether they want to keep that change or throw it back to the Lords again. And that can go on for quite some time. It's what's known in the trade as parliamentary ping pong.
Moving on to the trade bill, tell us why that is causing such controversy amongst farmers at the moment.
Well, there are all sorts of issues in the trade bill for almost every sector of the British economy. The one that really worries the farmers, I think, is going to be over food standards and the idea that they could find themselves being undercut by foodstuffs produced to far lower welfare standards in the case of, for example, the dreaded chlorinated chicken, or foodstuffs using products that are banned in this country at the moment, genetically modified soybeans or whatever. And if they're undercut, then a lot of farmers may find that they really, really struggle to survive the level of competition they might well then face. Now, all this, the government will turn around and tell you, is for the future, because this trade bill is actually just about a kind of system for rolling forward trade agreements that the UK already had as an EU member state, so that we keep on trading with countries that we once traded through via EU trade agreements on pretty much the same terms. And ministers point to their very strong manifesto commitments, but resist accepting any changes to their bill that would hem them in later on when they're trying to negotiate trade deals with other countries.
Are there devolution implications for agriculture in this trade deal too?
Oh, absolutely. Not least because there are different agricultural funding systems in Scotland, in Wales and in Northern Ireland. And Northern Ireland poses particular problems because of the very special relationship it's going to have with the EU. So things could get very, very complicated indeed. One of the things that particularly the SNP and Plaid Cymru were keen on was a lot of influence for the devolved assemblies on the trade deal. But that's actually very difficult to deliver, because if you know the UK government sends a team of negotiators off somewhere but doesn't actually have the final authority to accept a deal at the end, then it's very hard to make the deal stick. You know, suddenly he's a dreadfully sorry minister from foreign country. We've got problems with this in the Welsh Assembly. We may have to renegotiate this bit of the agreement. That can be very awkward indeed. So there are those kind of problems to come. There are also, you know, going to be different systems in the devolved areas of the UK in due course as well for agricultural subsidies, and all that can interact as well. So you really do get into a whole ball of wax when you try and figure out how this is all going to work.
I mean, a trade and agriculture commission has been set up. What's the feeling around Westminster about what its role is actually going to be?
Well, the idea is that it's an advisory role that feeds into all these worries about whether or not UK producers are going to end up being undercut. It's a temporary body. It doesn't have any kind of veto. So it's very much an advisory body that will, in theory, channel the voice of agriculture into government. But you don't have a cast iron guarantee that government will listen to that. And that leads to a whole load of action around both of these pieces of legislation, the trade bill and the agricultural bill, trying to put in various safeguards that the government has so far resisted accepting.
Westminster correspondent Mark Darcy, and we hope to speak to someone from the Trade and Agriculture Commission before too long. But that's it from us for today. I'm Kaz Graham. The producer is Toby Field, and the studio manager in Bristol is Ilse Laderman.